Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Hang on the Hoyland, Landgren Hoyland's flagship podcast. I'm your host, Gene Ross, joined, as always, by Josh Julie. And Josh, well, what do we have here? Ohio State somehow, some way, has snuck into the college football playoff as the number four seed. Josh and I are recording here shortly after the final four teams were announced, kind of as we expected, maybe a little bit of, you know, switch at 3 and 4 based on what some people thought after the events of championship weekend, which we'll get into. But the final four as it stands: Georgia number one, who will take on Ohio State as the number four seed, and Michigan at two, who will take on number three TCU. Josh, how the hell did we get here?
Well, what do you mean, Gene? I thought we were talking World Cup. I was going to go deep on Craig Berhalter, but no. Obviously, this is the topic of the weekend, right? Especially for us as Ohio State fans and college football fans. I'm not quite sure, to be honest with you. But I guess, look, it's been the theme all year, right? College football in 2022 has been off the wall. It's been insane. And so it kind of seems right that this is where we're at. You know, we've got a couple of seriously, you know, potentially flawed teams in this thing. We've got two superpowers, but you can maybe debate one. I don't want to sound like a sore sport or anything like that. For me, it sort of seems like Georgia and everyone else, which again is sort of different. But there's a lot to digest in the next month or so. I think that I'll probably flip and flop a bunch of different ways, but I'm super excited about it. And yeah, just the whole chaos of the thing, the season, sort of this felt like a predetermined outcome, like something odd was going to happen. And here's where we're at. And Ohio State received the benefit of the doubt. They came out on the good end of all this chaos.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, obviously we've spent the past week, the discourse around Ohio State, we've been firing Ryan Day, we've been firing assistant coaches, we've been burning the program to the ground. And at the end of the day, the dust settles and Ohio State is still in the college football playoff some way, somehow. So you'll take it wherever you can get it. You know, I was talking to Josh for the podcast, and I feel like this is either going to be, you know, this is either going to be 2014 Ohio State, where people didn't think they deserved to make it and they went on to win the national title, or 2016 Ohio State, where people didn't think they deserved to make it and they went on to get blown out by Clemson. One of those two things is probably going to happen. It remains to be seen what that will be in a month's time. Obviously, a lot to discuss between now and then, but just talking here, you know, about what went into the rankings. You know, Josh, you and I kind of wrote up ourselves in our year nuts last week. You know, does Ohio State deserve a playoff spot? You know, there's obviously a lot that had to happen between then and what actually wound up happening at championship weekend. You know, they needed some help from, you know, Clemson, USC, TCU. They needed at least two of those three teams to lose. Turns out all three of them did at one point. Ohio State should be delivering, you know, inedible arrangements to South Carolina for, you know, ruining the season of Clemson. And also, you know, just and Tennessee as well.
Kyle Whittingham deserves Utah, a whole bunch from Ohio State.
Yeah, Utah and South Carolina did as much to get Ohio State in the playoffs as Ohio State themselves did this past week. But it really all started, it started with, you know, South Carolina upsetting Clemson in the regular season, which kind of derailed their season, because I think Clemson probably would have still made it as a, you know, as a one-loss ACC champion had that not happened. But the real drama started to unfold on Friday night with Utah versus USC, as you mentioned, Kyle Whittingham's Utah team really took it to USC. You know, this was a team all season that was, you know, propped up by an explosive offense, a Heisman caliber quarterback in Caleb Williams, but one of the worst defensive units in the country, led by Alex Grinch. They're like 120th nationally in defense, and that kind of, you know, all came to pass against Utah. Didn't have any answers in that second half. They got out to, you know, a big first quarter lead, and that's not kind of just something Utah has done this year, where they just don't really try in the first quarter, and then they kick your ass in the latter three. And that's really what happened here. Utah got it back even, and then they didn't look back from there. I believe it was, you know, a 44-7 scoring run in Utah's favor. Really just blew him out. Obviously, Caleb Williams' injury had a lot to do with it as well. He could not really move at all in the latter half of this game. But that game, really more than anything, kind of solidified Ohio State's spot in the college football playoff. USC already with the one loss, which was to Utah in the regular season. No real impressive wins on their resume to speak of. You know, they beat a ranked UCLA team that went on to lose to Arizona. They beat a ranked Notre Dame team, which Ohio State had the same exact margin of victory over. So really nothing there to continue to, like, keep USC in a playoff spot. And a lot of the discourse this weekend was, you know, talking about how, oh, like, USC is getting getting punished for playing an additional tough game, whereas Ohio State is getting to, you know, reap the rewards, getting to sit at home after getting blown out. And, you know, I wrote a little column this weekend as well, just talking about how I think that's the wrong way to look at it. Like, this was very much a play-in game for USC rather than a play-out game for them. They needed this win on their resume to prove that they belonged. You know, this was their chance to, you know, get that win back over Utah from their one regular season loss. This was a chance to put another, you know, highly ranked team on their resume and just kind of prop them up in a way that showed that they were that they deserved to be in the college football playoff. And they did not do that in resounding fashion. And as a result, they ended up with two losses. We've never seen a two-loss team make the college football playoff. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, Ohio State probably deserves to be in over them. They were the better team throughout the course of the regular season, you know, both with one loss. Ohio State's to, you know, the number two team in the country. Probably the score not really reflecting the total outcome of that game. Ohio State really lost on five total plays, but nonetheless, just I didn't. It was very annoying to see how many people were complaining about how, you know, USC losing their additional game would get them out in favor of Ohio State, because I just don't think that's really what this came down to. I think USC is a team that was kind of on the edge already, and it was just no one really else to put in that number four spot. So they were there by default, and in their chance to prove that they belonged in that spot, they ultimately came up very, very short.
I like that you called it a play-in game, because I hadn't really thought about that, but I'm sort of with you. I think that USC did, the burden of proof was sort of on USC in this one. They needed to prove that they did belong, because, you know, look, they've got the Heisman probably winner at this point, high-profile offense, high-profile head coach, turned it around from 4-8, but they were still sort of the Lincoln Riley Oklahoma teams, in my opinion. You know, he brought along his defensive coordinator, he who shall not be named. Guy just clearly doesn't get it. Didn't get it at Oklahoma, didn't get it at Ohio State, but continues to be employed as this, you know, sort of highly compensated, I'm guessing. I'm not even going to say highly thought of, but USC needed to prove that they could win a different sort of game to show some sort of balance, right? Because I think that you can play the results of one game and sort of throw that back at Ohio State too. Like, look, you're all flash, no substance, but Ohio State showed real improvement on the defensive side of the ball this year, Michigan game withstanding. You're right, that came down to a handful of plays. So Ohio State went out and sort of did something, and they had a really good regular season, except for that last game, whereas USC struggled in a couple, and the offense was the only thing that really got them by. I know people are going to bring up turnover margin. That's a fluky stat. It's a fluky number. USC had the ball handed to them, given to them, more than I've ever seen. And I only caught a handful of their games. So they needed to prove that they could be a balanced team, win a tough game, and they didn't, right? And it wasn't just the fact that they lost. They jumped out to a 17-3 lead, and honestly, I was like, man, this thing might be a wrap. But Utah went on to outscore them 44-7. I mean, they got their ass kicked after that. And you can point to Caleb Williams and things like that. It's a fair argument, but it became the game that we've seen 100 times in the past from a team like that, where, you know, offense wasn't quite clicking, wasn't quite working, and the defense couldn't keep up. So I think that's what sort of knocked them out and makes Ohio State more deserving is, you know, we can talk about the game, but you watch 12 football games, Ohio State's the better team, the more balanced team. And so, yes, USC lost their leg to stand on when they lost their conference championship game.
Yeah, and the other thing that goes into this too is the way that these two conferences, you know, set up their conference title games. You look at the Pac-12; they just take the two best teams. There's no divisions over there, so that's a very different scenario than in the Big Ten, where you've got Michigan going up against Purdue, who everyone knows is not, you know, the second best team in the Big Ten, but they're just in by virtue of winning the West. You know, if the Big Ten was set up like the Pac-12, Ohio State would have been playing Michigan in the Big Ten title game with a chance to play themselves in. So, I don't think you could you know, penalize Ohio State for the way that their conference is set up. It's a, you know, it's a silly system. We've been saying that they need to, you know, get rid of the divisions for a little bit now, or at least, you know, balance them. They're going to get rid of them in the near future when they move to the 12-team playoff, I'd imagine. But nonetheless, I don't think you could, you know, these aren't two equal things. Like, obviously, you know, Oregon State beating Oregon greatly changed the Pac-12 title game because of the way that conference is set up as well. So a lot went into the way that these two games were played, and I just think that people are overlooking that fact. Like, the Big Ten title game wasn't between the two best teams in the Big Ten. It was against the winner of each of the divisions, whereas the Pac-12 title game is the two best teams from the entire conference.
Yeah, and a lot of people brought that up, right? The biggest flaw in the system, and I think Matt brought this up in a piece, and he wasn't the only one, he wasn't the first one, but that's the one that sort of jumped out to me, is the system is flawed. This is never going to be perfect. I don't even know that a 12-team playoff is going to be perfect, but you're always going to have debate. Nothing is ever going to be equal because of the setups and the qualifications and things like that. So yeah, that's another good point to bring up. But it's like, every argument you want to make, you're not, and I'm not actually saying you in this instance, but every argument that somebody brings up, like, they're not arguing against a team, they're arguing against a system. And so I think that a eventual playoff push to the 12 teams maybe improves some things. But yeah, you're right. With USC and Ohio State, you're not comparing apples to apples. It's apples to oranges. And whichever fruit you want to refer to USC as, that they had two losses. So at the end of the day, that was my thing, is all the two lost teams, and maybe this is a segue into talking some, you know, about some of the other teams that we wanted to bring up. If you get two losses, you're out. And that's just, that's the way it's been. And the committee does not always go with precedent, but that is the one that they have not gone away from or broken. So two loss, get your ass out.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I think, you know, looking at this, and once that game happened, once USC lost in the way that they did, it opened the door for any team to slide into that fourth spot. And, you know, you look at the other teams out there, you know, I've already alluded to, you know, teams like, you know, Oregon notwithstanding, because they didn't even play in their title game after that loss to Oregon State. But, you know, Tennessee had that additional loss to South Carolina to get them two losses. Alabama, two losses. You know, pretty much everyone else in contention for that fourth spot had two losses besides Ohio State. And, you know, I just think that a lot of the debate, well, I guess, was between whether it would be Ohio State and or Alabama in that fourth spot. And I think that maybe some people thought, you know, once TCU lost a close game in their game in overtime to Kansas State in the Big 12 title game, that maybe both Ohio State and Alabama would get into the college football playoff. But at the end of the day, there was really no argument for Alabama to make the playoff other than the fact that they are Alabama. They have no, you know, their best win of the season was Ole Miss, who isn't really all that good and lost their rivalry game as well in pretty bad fashion. So no quality wins for Alabama. They wanted to go out and say that, you know, they didn't have any bad losses, and that's all well and good, but you also do have to beat, you know, a good team here and there to justify having those two losses, and they didn't have that. So other than having, you know, the brand of Alabama and having Bryce Young, they really had no other arguments that, you know, put them ahead of Ohio State. Ohio State, at the end of the day, has the bad loss to Michigan, but they also had a pretty good win on the road at Penn State, who's going to finish. I didn't see what the final rankings were total, but they're somewhere around 8, 9, you know, 7, somewhere in the top 10. They have the win over Notre Dame. They beat every other team on their schedule by double digits. So there really, in my mind, was zero argument for Alabama other than them being, you know, the brand that they are. And, you know, to see Nick Saban going on at halftime of the Big Ten title game and basically, you know, politicking to try to get his team in the playoff was very odd to me. And I didn't understand any of the you know, the discussions about Alabama potentially making the playoff, because at no point this year did they prove that they deserve to be there.
I don't even know what else to say in response, because there's really no argument. You know, you make all of the points that need to be made. The only a couple other things that I would bring up in regards to Alabama, though, first and foremost, I think they are kind of good, but you're right. Like, you have to earn your way in, and you have to have something sort of tangible to hold on to be like, look at what I have. We belong there. And win wise, they just didn't have it. But I would also sort of look at their strength of schedule, right? Utah State, UL Monroe, Austin Peay, and then, yes, the Texas game. So they beat Texas by 1 point, quarterbacks in and out of that game. Not an impressive win at this point. But then, you know, Michigan got knocked for their out-of-conference schedule, and I don't ultimately know where Utah State and UL Monroe ended up. I know what Austin Peay is. And so, yeah, like, you can't – if you're going to schedule those sort of teams, then you have to clearly outweigh some of the, you know, like, negative reputation, I guess, of those inferior teams that you beat. They just didn't have it. The Ole Miss win, it's fine. And the Mississippi State win, okay. But yeah, neither one of those is something that you can really hang your hat on. And I'll go back to the Austin Peay game again. Recency bias plays into this. Whether the committee wants to admit that or not, it does. And I know you subbed in that Texas game early on, but, and they've done this before too, to throw in like an Austin Peay in week 11, like, you kind of did it to yourself. If you want momentum building towards the CFP selection, then you need to have something on your resume to point to. And it's like, hey, yeah, we had that Ole Miss win. Okay, what'd you have after that? Well, we smoked Austin Peay. Guess what? No one cares. And I, you know, I don't know how many committee members would point to the other teams, like 10th and 11th opponent. Like, it's sort of in the rear view by now. But when it's a team like that, an Austin Peay, where you're just scheduling an absolute layup, like, it takes away from your case, I think, in building that resume, because at the end they just sort of went out like a lamb, right? So that's my thing against Alabama. And look, I mean, you're not going to get in every year. I also think it was sort of pathetic for Nick Saban to go on Fox, go on national TV, and sort of campaign for his own team. He's got to do it. But, you know, at the end of the day, again, two losses. And that's the biggest thing. And I don't ever want to hear Alabama, you know, complaining about not getting the benefit of the doubt, because think back to 2017. Other people have brought this up too, right? But Alabama didn't play in their conference championship game, got in over, you know, Penn State, I believe, that had the great record. And I might be mixing that up a little bit. I had it written down and sort of forgot, but they've gotten the benefit of the doubt multiple times. And so has Ohio State. Like, whatever, it is what it is. But Alabama can't cry foul here. Their fans cannot cry foul. They lost two games. They didn't deserve a spot. And even the teams they did lose to, I know Tennessee ended up at number 6, also 2 losses. I know LSU is going to be in or around the top 10. They had 4 losses. So those quote unquote good losses that Nick Saban talked about and alluded to, how great are they really? When you look back at it, or is it just some sort of like SEC confirmation bias that, hey, we lost in the SEC, so we know they are good losses? I do think Tennessee is a good team. They were a good team when Bama lost to them. LSU, I'm not so sure. So I wouldn't be, you know, notching that one in the belt and hyping it up as a good loss if I were Nick Saban and or Alabama.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too much more into Alabama talk, but Alabama's lucky to be at 5 as opposed to, you know, Tennessee, who beat them. And I know that probably, you know, Hendon Hooker's injury has something to do with that. Not that, you know, that matters in the grand scheme of things now, but the fact that Alabama is ahead of Tennessee, who they lost to, is odd in its own right. So, yeah, just at the end of the day, there was no other team that had an argument for that number 4 spot other than Ohio State. We talked about Alabama. We talked about, you know, Tennessee losing to South Carolina, Clemson losing to South Carolina, the USC lost in their title game. There was just no other, you know, good one loss team out there besides Ohio State to make it. And so kind of by default, the Buckeyes are in. And now they'll have a chance to kind of, you know, change the narrative. We've talked all, you know, all week since that Michigan game about all the things that need to change with this program. And you know, immediately now Ryan Day will get a chance to prove that he is not, you know, the guy that a lot of us think he is at this point. So obviously a great, you know, big positive for Ohio State. There was, I do want to talk about, you know, whether or not we think the committee got it right in the seeding. We know, you know, we talked about the teams are exactly where they should be, or, you know, the teams that are in are the teams that should be in. But do we think that the seeding is correct? You know, I briefly mentioned TCU losing their conference title game to Kansas State. It went to overtime. They only lost by a field goal. Max Duggan played his heart out, but ultimately came up short. There was some debate over whether or not Ohio State would come in at the 3 spot or the 4 spot. Obviously, if they came in at number 3, they would get the immediate rematch against Michigan in the college football playoff. I don't know if the committee wanted to set that up. I'd imagine they probably would if they could, because that game would probably break all college football playoff prior ranking TV ratings. But nonetheless, Josh, do you think that it was correct to keep TCU at number 3 after their, you know, their first loss of the year in a close game? Or do you think that maybe Ohio State should have moved up to number 3 even though they didn't even play?
I think the committee got this one right. You know, I was watching the game, sort of thinking, the TCU game, thinking of myself and, you know, talking to some friends and this, that, and the other. And if the Horned Frogs had lost by 10, 14, 17, I think it becomes a real debate. But the fact that, you know, they took that game to overtime, they essentially lost because their coach took the aggressive option or went the aggressive route in trying to punch it in for 7 as opposed to take the points. Like, you're talking about a 3-point loss in overtime against a team that you already beat. So there was the part of me that thought, well, look, if you lose, you have to go back somewhere. You have to drop at least a little bit. But I was willing to throw that out the window when comparing them to Ohio State. They got to a conference championship game, lost by a field goal in overtime. So I did not think that they deserved to drop. So, yeah, I think the CFP committee got it right. Now, if they were able to justify another decision, I think they would have. Like, I truly think it comes down to the closeness of the game, because even if it's 7 points, 10 points, something like that, the committee can look at it and be like, oh, well, you know, they lost to an inferior team, whereas Ohio State lost to the team that we have currently ranked number 2. So we thought they should just sort of flip flop. That would have been maybe a dream scenario for them to get the rematch in a college football playoff, because then you guarantee yourself eyeballs probably on both games. Although, you know, how does TCU match up with Georgia? Doesn't matter now. But yeah, I think they got it right. How about you, Gene?
Yeah, I agree that, you know, TCU didn't deserve to drop in their first loss, and, you know, in a tough game against a team that they, you know, had already beaten on the year. So it's kind of a net neutral there. But my kind of thing is here comes down to Georgia. Like, did you want to reward Georgia for being the number one seed with a, you know, on paper easier game? Like, would Georgia rather play Ohio State or TCU? I guarantee they'd rather play TCU. So maybe in trying to, you know, in a twofold way, you know, TCU loses their last game, much like Ohio State, and then, you know, Georgia getting an easier game, I think that there might have been an argument to put TCU at that 4 spot and also set up that Ohio State-Michigan rematch. A lot of intrigue there, while also giving the, you know, the number one seed kind of a, you know, an added bonus for being that one seed all year long. But yeah, I think overall they got it right. I wasn't pining for Ohio State to be number 3 after the way that their season ended. I think they're lucky to be involved at all. Obviously, you know, Georgia, very good team, defending national champs. We'll probably talk about that game briefly here in a little bit, and then we'll have our full preview closer to, you know, the game week. But yeah, I think they got it right. You know, the teams are right. I think the order is right. Two, you know, very interesting games. Ohio State obviously looking for redemption against the defending national champs. And then Michigan and TCU, two teams with, you know, differing styles, two teams that don't have a ton of experience in the playoffs. Obviously, Michigan made it last year, but TCU, this is their first time. So two very intriguing matchups. They did already announce the kickoff times. The Michigan-TCU game will be at 4 p.m. Ohio State, obviously getting the primetime game at 8 p.m. against Georgia. So that's what we have on tap for New Year's Eve. And yeah, that's kind of where we sit. It's surprising to be here. I didn't think we'd be here, you know, after the Michigan game. There was a lot of things that needed to break Ohio State's way in order for this to happen, and they pretty much all did. And now here we are. Ohio State's going to have a chance to right their wrongs. They are They had a terrible loss at the end of the season to their biggest rival for the second year in a row. There's a lot of people doubting them. There's a lot of people doubting Ryan Day. So are you going to come out here and prove that you deserve to be here, prove that this team is what we thought they were earlier in the year? You know, they're going to have basically a month off here to get healthy. You know, hopefully guys like Mayan Williams, Travion Henderson can get healthy. Maybe you see even Jackson Smith and Jigba in this game, which I think would be a game changer. That remains to be, you know, seen. I don't think we'll really know anything about that at any point during this break between games, because that's just not how Ohio State has operated on injuries this year. But I think getting healthy is super important. And I think, you know, if Ryan Day is actually serious about what he's said recently, you know, he said on his radio show lately that they, you know, that if they got another chance, they were going to be aggressive. They're going to go at people, you know, offensively. That remains to be seen. I am still not fully, you know, confident in Ryan Day's ability to game plan for or play call in a big football game. But nonetheless, he will have a chance to prove me and a lot of his other doubters wrong in a huge game for Ohio State here that not many thought that they would, you know, me, you, anybody. I don't think any of us thought we'd be here, you know, come a week ago.
I certainly didn't. I mean, it was in the back of my mind that they could potentially creep in just because of the one loss. You know, I looked at it and I was like, well, every other team that maybe has an argument right now, like the argument was eliminated. Two losses is the elimination. Like, it is the only precedent this committee has stuck by. So I thought there was a chance, but it all sort of depended on what happened during conference championship week, how some of these other teams looked. And Ohio State got lucky. I guess you could say they're fortunate to now be in this thing. But I want to flip it a little bit, Gene. And before we go too in-depth with this Georgia matchup, and I know we're not going to get into it too much today, but between Georgia and Michigan, who did you want to face as an Ohio State fan? Because I think that is a very interesting argument. You know, do you want the immediate rematch? Do you want to try and end Michigan's dreams in a title game? Are you, you know, fearful or afraid of Georgia because they have been this juggernaut? Where are you at? Who did you want this morning, going in knowing that Ohio State was probably going to get in, and kind of where are you at now with the matchup that they were given?
Yeah, I do think that, you know, it's a tough decision. Obviously, Georgia and Michigan, both very good football teams. In my ideal world, Ohio State doesn't face Michigan at all in the playoffs, because I don't know if my nerves can handle a game of that magnitude. But I think at the end of the day, the enemy you know is better than the one you don't. I think the immediate Michigan rematch probably would have been better, just because we kind of know what they are at this point. We know what they're going to do. We know what their injury situation is like. Blake Corum, you know, officially out for the year. So you know it's going to be Dom Edwards back there. You know what they're going to try to do to you with, you know, what the way J.J. McCarthy played against Ohio State last time. So, you know, all of that going into it, I think, you know, Jim Knowles changing his game plan and kind of figuring out how to fix what happened last time out. I think, you know, playing a team, it's always hard to beat a team twice in a row. We saw what happened between Kansas State and TCU. I mean, you know, Utah managed to do it against USC, but that's another story. But it is generally hard to beat the same team twice, especially if you're playing them twice in a row. So I think I would have rather seen Ohio State, Michigan in that first round, just because, like I said, you know, I don't know if I could physically, mentally handle an Ohio State, Michigan national title game if both of those teams win their first round matchups. So that plays into it as well. But I personally would have rather played Michigan, just because of, you know, the knowledge you have of that football team. I do think that the Ohio State Georgia, you know, matchup is an intriguing one. I think that Georgia, you know, Georgia obviously one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the country, even after losing all of those guys to the NFL after last year. Their offense is very, very solid. I do think that there's some matchup things that, you know, could perhaps play in Ohio State's favor if they come in and do all the right things, which, you know, remains to be seen, as we, you know, what we talked about. But I think I would have rather played Michigan right away, just because of everything we know. What about you, Josh?
I think that I am with you, but from a narrative perspective, I also kind of like this matchup with Georgia. Not like it, you know, on paper, X's and O's, but just the narrative surrounding it. Harken back to 2014, you know, Ohio State went in as the number four seed against number one ranked Alabama, expected to lose, shocked the world, 85 yards through the heart of the South, yada, yada, yada. And Ohio State goes on to win the first CFP national title. So a lot of similarities there. And then, you know, I sort of like the fact that Ohio State will now have to earn that rematch if they are to get it. They now need to go to Atlanta, into the heart of the beast, beat Georgia at home. And it's like my guy Ric Flair says, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And Georgia is the man, unequivocally so right now. They have ruled college football over the last couple of seasons. And so Ohio State is going to have to earn their way back. If they do, and they were to face Michigan and lose one, gosh, that, you know, that would be devastating, heartbreaking. I don't want to go there right now, but from that sense of things, I do kind of like the matchup with Georgia. And you and I talked about it a little bit. We didn't go in depth in their schedule and things like that, but Georgia is human. They bleed. They're mortal. So it's not like they are some unbeatable team. You know, just looking at a couple of their games throughout the season, 16-6 over Kentucky. They sort of played around with Georgia Tech for a little bit, but maybe that was just lack of focus. Early in the season, they didn't look great. You know, Kent State gave them a game for a little bit. So it's not like the Bulldogs are, you know, this, I can't think of a specific team, but they're not running through every single opponent they've had, 40-point margin of victory every single week. They've got holes, although small ones, and they're super talented. I think their defense is scarier than the offense, but it's going to be a good litmus test of where Ohio State is at, because you know, maybe coming into the season, throughout the season, maybe you even feel this way now, there could be arguments made that, well, Ohio State is still one of, if not the most talented teams, and their defense just didn't play a smart game. The play calling was not smart against Michigan, but they're the better team. Well, if you think they're that damn talented, here's your chance to prove it, right? They are going against the national, the defending champions, and a team that's undefeated right now and has slayed the beast a number of times in Alabama. So here's your shot, man. If you want to go out and earn it, this is the way to do it. So I think Michigan would have been the easier opponent, and I like that immediate revenge factor. But from a narrative perspective, this matchup with Georgia is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, the last time that Ohio State kind of backed their way into the playoff at number four to play an SEC team in their own backyard, it went pretty well for them. So hopefully it goes similarly this time around. Maybe Georgia's, you know, got some animosity towards Ohio State for the way that the Justin Fields situation went down. This is maybe a, you know, Bulldogs revenge game for Justin Fields. But nonetheless, I tend to agree with you there. I don't really know where else to go from here. You know, this is we got a while before the game. I don't really want to go too much into preview in depth on these two teams. We'll obviously have time to do that. We will know a little bit more about these teams, hopefully, as the game gets closer. You know, I doubt Ohio State will tell us much about their injury situation, but you'd have to imagine that, you know, at least the guy, maybe everyone besides JSN, I'd imagine will be good to go in this one. I think that having time to heal the injuries for, you know, Henderson, Williams, and all those sort of guys will definitely be beneficial for them in the long run. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm not super optimistic about their, you know, the way that things are going to go in this one. Ryan Day is still on my list, in terms of his ways that he goes about these top 10, these highly ranked matchups. This is not an easy game by any means, playing Georgia in Georgia, the best team in all of college football that for the entire year. And like we said, they had their flaws, but still, you know, far and away, probably the best team in college football all season long. So not an easy game by any means, but I think this Ohio State team has the talent to get it done if they play the way that we know they're capable of. You know, if guys are healthy, like we're saying, if the defense, you know, puts together a better game plan than they did against a team like Michigan, all of that plays a factor. So I am, you know, I'm excited. You know, I'm not overly optimistic, but I am excited for this matchup. It's always good to have a chance, you know, whether or not you think Ohio State deserved to make the college football playoff. It's always good to have a chance to compete. You know, if you're not in it, you can't win it. So, you know, getting into the college football playoff, getting a chance for redemption, getting a chance to still compete for a national title after everything that happened is definitely a positive regardless of what happens in the game. So I think either way, you know, this is definitely good, and we're looking forward to it.
in it to win it. That's all you can ask for is a chance. And yeah, like I keep thinking about 2014. I know it's not an apples to apples comparison, but Ohio State was sort of up against the same perceived juggernaut, being the number four, going down into the South. So everything's still ahead of you. And that's the most positive sort of outlook I think to have is at the beginning of the season, you wanted to get into a CFP with a chance to win it all. Here it is, the end of the season, you are in a CFP with a chance to win it all. So Ohio State has everything ahead of them, everything to prove coming off of a loss, a second consecutive loss to their rival. So there is going to be, I think, a lot to talk about and a lot to sort of look at in the lead up. Gene, I did want to throw you one audible though, because I know we didn't want to preview this Georgia game. That's too far down the road. But since we last recorded, Brian Hartline has sort of come out and said that he is, you know, in Columbus for now. I don't know what that means. I don't know if you want to even look too much into it. But what did you think of that, now that it seems like Brian Hartline might be around for at least another year and then TBD? Like, how good did that make you feel before we jet out of here?
Yeah, that's definitely a positive. I always kind of thought Brian Hartline isn't in it really for, you know, the money or the accolades. I think he just enjoys doing this. And obviously, you know, he had, you know, a long professional career. He's got the money. I think he just loves being at Ohio State, back at his alma mater, you know, coaching up wide receivers because he's so good at it. Kids obviously love him, and he loves, you know, that relationship he has with these recruits, and you know, the players at Ohio State is second to none. So I wasn't really all that concerned with Brian Hartline leaving. I don't think he's one of these guys that's like trying to get, you know, a head coaching job. Maybe he'll interview here and there, but I don't think that's his ultimate goal. I think he, you know, if he's able to win a national title as a wide receivers coach at Ohio State, I think he's more than happy doing that. So I wasn't really all that concerned, but it is good to see him, you know, re-up on his commitment to Ohio State. There was obviously rumors about him, you know, interviewing for the Cincinnati job, being perhaps the top candidate there, but it does sound like he is staying in Columbus for at least the, you know, the near future. So we do love to see that. Losing him would be obviously very big in terms of both recruiting and the wide receiver play at Ohio State. So he's a very integral part of this coaching staff. I wanted to mention too, not Ohio State related, but just fun. Deion Sanders taking the Colorado job. Kind of exciting. I know this is really off the beaten path of this podcast, but I'm very excited to see what he's able to do at the P5 level. Obviously, Colorado, a program that has struggled mightily, you know, since Mel Tucker left, but very exciting to see Coach Prime at this level. I'm interested to see what he can do. I think he's bringing, you know, his son is going to transfer along with him to Colorado, who's a very good quarterback at that level. So I'm very intrigued of how that works out. I think he's, you know, he's a fun guy. Obviously, recruits love him. I think he's going to, you know, kick ass at the recruiting level at Colorado. So I am excited to see what happens there. So I know that's kind of unrelated, but while we're talking about coaching, that is also kind of the big news in the coaching world since we last talked. And also, obviously, Luke Fickell taking the Wisconsin job, which I don't think we had a chance to talk about since our last recording either. I think we kind of looked at him as a potential suitor should Ohio State look to move on from Ryan Day, and now he's kind of off the board, and he is a, you know, Ohio State has to go to Wisconsin next year against that Luke Fickell team, and I don't know if they will have, you know, maybe the talent basis to, you know, perhaps upset Ohio State in that game, but definitely intriguing to have Luke Fickell, you know, in the Big Ten with his recruiting chops, with his ability of coaching. We saw what he did at Cincinnati. Obviously another big story, and one that pertains much more to Ohio State than the Deion Sanders one did.
It's like all of the recent coaching news, net positive for Ohio State, right? They get to seemingly hang on to Brian Hartline. I'm with you. You know, I love the guy, best recruiter in the country. And ultimately, I think that he is still here because he loves what he does. And why wouldn't you? You know, he's a Buckeye through and through. I don't think he is afraid of any sort of challenge out there. But it's like, hey, I've never had a job that I absolutely loved before, but I can imagine that if I did, I'd be like, look, I'm not looking to leave. You guys are going to have to push me out the door because it is awesome here. So I imagine that's sort of his thinking. With Luke Fickell, yes, he's going to come into the Big Ten and try and kick your butt with Wisconsin, but as another former Buckeye, you like to see good things for him. And this is a, you know, I think you would say it's a better opportunity. It's a higher profile opportunity for him. So we'll have to face them down the road at some point. But good for Luke. And yeah, if all else fails, he's a little bit he's back in the conference. So read into that whatever you will. And then Deion Sanders, pretty cool, right? It's sort of interesting when I think about it, taking over a Colorado program, which has been awful. But Boulder is awesome. They're in a Power 5 conference. He, with the transfer portal now, he can go out and maybe try and handpick some guys to help rebuild this roster quickly. Maybe he turns it around in the same style as a Lincoln Riley. That being said, I don't think we have any clue if he can coach. Like, and this is not to belittle Jackson State and, you know, the teams that they play against and play with in their conference and things like that. But it's a whole different level in FBS. It just is. And, you know, I know that they had Travis Hunter and they got some recruits that would not typically go to these HBCUs. Deion went out and got those guys, brought them into Jackson State. So they had a talent advantage. He's not going to have a talent advantage at Colorado. Certainly not in his first year. And I don't know about years 2, 3, 4, and 5 down the road. So it will be a big, big challenge. Because you know, you look at some of these other successful coaches, they have a background in it. Deion Sanders is a legend in the game of football, but he's a personality coach. And I can't think of like the last one who was uber successful in football, but you know, he played for the Reds. Like, I rooted for Deion. I like the guy. I hope that he does well, but it's no guaranteed thing in my opinion. So a lot of interesting news. I'm glad you brought up the other two, but just another thing to sort of throw out of here before we, you know, vaya con Dios and get on our way.
Yeah, you know, we've seen how important, you know, assistant coaching can be at Ohio State. So I imagine that, you know, the staff he puts together at Colorado will definitely go a long way into determining that. I guess the only other last little, I guess, piece of coaching news we could talk about before we head out of here that is sort of also Ohio State related is that Florida Atlantic hired Tom Herman to be their head coach. So another, you know, former Ohio State offense coordinator helped them win the national title in 2014. You know, I think was better at Texas than people gave him credit for, especially as you look at what Texas is now. I think he's going to do really well at Florida Atlantic. I think that's kind of a similar situation to what Lane Kiffin did there in kind of restarting his coaching career. So that's kind of an Ohio State adjacent coaching news. And also I saw this morning that, you know, with North Carolina State in looking for a new coach, they might promote Tim Beck to be their head coach. So my condolences to the Wolfpack there. So that's tough. Yeah, that's really it. That's really, I think, all we had, Josh, unless you want to talk about anything else. We are, you know, did not expect to be here, but alas, here we are. Ohio State with a chance to shock the world yet again. Ohio against the world, as it has been. If they were to win a national title, they would have to, you know, knock off the defending national champions, as well as probably, you know, avenge their loss to Michigan in the national title game. So could be a storybook ending here for Ohio State if all goes well. But of course, you know, this is why they play the games. We will see how it turns out. And like I said, we will obviously have, you know, a more in-depth preview of that Georgia game when time gets closer. But for now, I think that's pretty much all we got.
Yeah, I don't want to give away too many of my hot takes. Looking forward to that during the game preview and things like that. So you hit the nail on the head. You want a shot. You want to be in the ring with a chance to knock the other guys out in this instance, or the teams, I should say. Ohio State has a chance to do that. Like I said, they are where they wanted to be coming into the season, and that's all you can really ask for. I'm going to choose to remain optimistic and look forward to the next month or so.
Absolutely. It is a long month ahead until we get to that game, but I promise you we'll be here before you know it. So that'll be all. That'll be it from us today. We will obviously have a ton of content here and there between now and game time over at landgrantholyland.com. So be sure to check that out, as well as all of our lovely basketball coverage we have going on, both on the men's and the women's side. So check all that out over at landgrantholyland.com. Be sure to like, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff, all the podcasts ask you to do here. And for Josh Dooley, I am Gene Ross. And as always, go Bucks.